Welcome to our collective nightmare, where we gather to watch the world unravel like a cheap sweater. Today's episode is brought to you by the World Health Organization's latest reminder that progress is a fragile illusion. Maternal deaths, those tragic preventable losses of life during what should be moments of creation and hope, have been on a downward trend for two decades. But fear not, humanity has found a way to turn back time. Global aid cuts. Yes, after years of seeing maternal mortality rates drop by 40%, we've decided it's high time to undo all that hard work. With an estimated 260,000 women still dying in pregnancy and childbirth last year alone, the situation was apparently just too optimistic for our taste. So now we're slashing aid like it's going out of style, because who needs hope when you can have despair? The Trump administration led the charge by freezing USAID funding, because nothing screams pro-life quite like cutting support for maternal health programs across the globe. Meanwhile, Europe is also getting in on the action, diverting funds from saving lives to bolstering defense budgets against Russia's shadowy presence. Of course, these decisions hit sub-Saharan Africa hardest, where about 70% of maternal deaths occur. But why stop there? Let's ensure poorer countries bear the brunt too. They already account for nearly half of all maternal deaths worldwide. It's almost as if we're playing some twisted game where those with the least are expected to suffer the most. And let's not forget our old friend COVID-19, who contributed an extra 40,000 maternal deaths in 2021 because pandemics love company, and chaos loves silence from policymakers. So here we are, clinics closing their doors while midwives pack up their bags, supply chains for life-saving medicines disrupted as if hemorrhage and preeclampsia were mere inconveniences, and communities left without essential care because investing in weapons somehow took precedence over investing in human life. But take heart, the UN tells us solutions exist. Midwives, nurses, community health workers. If only someone would invest in them before it becomes another chapter in this ongoing nightmare saga. In conclusion, while glimmers of hope flicker faintly on distant horizons, reminding us what could be possible when sanity prevails, we remain steadfastly committed instead towards ensuring every setback remains firmly entrenched within our collective reality show called Humanity's Greatest Failures.
Today on White People Problems, let's talk about Caitlin Clark. Yes, Caitlin Clark, a name that sounds like she should be the protagonist in a Hallmark movie set in a small town where everyone wears oversized sweaters and drinks pumpkin spice lattes year-round. But no, she's actually a basketball prodigy from West Des Moines, Iowa. And if you think that's the setup for a quirky indie film about overcoming adversity, think again, because her biggest struggle seems to have been choosing between varsity soccer and basketball in high school. Now I know what you're thinking. Oh no, how did she ever manage? Well, folks, don't worry. She powered through and became the NCAA's all-time leading scorer. That's right, Caitlin Clark is so good at putting a ball through a hoop that they've named an effect after her. The Caitlin Clark effect has apparently boosted WNBA attendance by 48%. Meanwhile, people are still trying to figure out why they can't get anyone to show up for their kids' piano recital. And then there's the ESPN Plus docuseries featuring Caitlin during her senior season. She's not just starring in it, she's also an executive producer. Because when you're this good at shooting hoops, producing a TV show is just another Tuesday. But wait, there's more. After declaring for the WNBA draft and being picked first overall by the Indiana Fever, because of course, she signs an 8-year deal with Nike worth up to $28 million. Let me repeat, $28 million to wear shoes while doing something you love. Meanwhile, somewhere else in America, someone's aunt is still arguing over expired Kohl's cash. Then there was her rookie debut, drawing 2.1 million viewers on ESPN2 and Disney Plus. Yes, Disney Plus, because nothing says family-friendly entertainment like watching someone dunk on your dreams of athletic stardom. And as if all that wasn't enough to fill up your gratitude journal for life, Time magazine names her Athlete of the Year after winning Rookie of the Year almost unanimously, except for one person who probably thought they were voting for American Idol. Finally, and here's where we really hit peak white people problems, the University of Iowa retires her jersey number 22 less than 2 years after graduation. Imagine having your number retired before you've even had time to lose your college ID card or forget which side of campus has better parking. So there you have it. Caitlin Clark, a saga of triumph over, well, mild inconvenience, as always with white people. Problems. It's not about hardship, it's about making sure everyone's aware that even smooth sailing deserves its own documentary series.
Ah, The sweet scent of lumber and irony fills the air as America prepares to double down on its decades-long spat with our northern neighbors. In a move that screams progress, the U.S. Department of Commerce has decided to hike duties on Canadian softwood lumber from a modest 14.4% to an eye-watering 34.45%. Because why settle for merely expensive housing when you can aim for unaffordable? This isn't just any run-of-the-mill trade dispute. It's a saga that stretches back years, like a soap opera without end credits. The plot? The U.S. claims Canada is unfairly subsidizing its lumber industry, while Canada argues these duties are as unjustified as they are predictable. In the land where housing costs are already climbing faster than a squirrel up a tree, American homebuilders are understandably concerned. After all, President Trump promised lower costs and more affordable homes, promises now buried under layers of tariffs thicker than your average redwood. But fear not. The U.S. Lumber Coalition assures us this is all about leveling the playing field. Apparently, the existing U.S. lumber industry is simply brimming with untapped potential, like an old sawmill waiting for someone to flick the on switch. Andrew Miller from the Coalition insists these measures will create jobs by forcing those pesky Canadians out of our market share. Meanwhile, Jason Brochu in Maine is ready to spring into action at his mills running at a cool 60% capacity. Just imagine, if demand magically appears overnight, he could crank up production faster than you can say, trade war. So here we find ourselves in 2025, a time when building homes becomes less about construction and more about navigating international drama wrapped in bureaucracy. But who needs affordable housing when you've got tariffs? After all, nothing says economic prosperity quite like making life harder for everyone involved.
Welcome to the Existential Crisis Hour, where we ponder the absurdity of existence while sipping on a lukewarm cup of irony. Today's topic, how to make $3.8 trillion disappear from the federal budget, brought to you by CNN's What Matters newsletter. Because if there's one thing that truly matters in life, it's understanding the magic tricks performed in Washington, D.C. Imagine waking up one morning and realizing your life savings have vanished into thin air. Not because you spent it on avocado toast, but because someone reinterpreted the rules of reality itself. Well, folks, that's essentially what's happening with our federal budget. Senate Republicans have decided that $3.8 trillion can simply be erased by redefining what counts as current policy. It's like deciding calories don't count if you eat standing up. Now, let's talk tariffs, the economic equivalent of telling your neighbor you're going to build a fence so high they'll need a passport just to look over it. President Trump assures us this is all part of his grand plan to bring manufacturing back to America, because nothing says welcome home like higher prices for everything from soybeans to smartphones. But fear not, to offset these rising costs, Trump promises tax cuts so generous they might just make you forget about those pesky tariffs altogether. Of course, these tax cuts are funded by an accounting trick so bold it would make Houdini blush. Simply pretend the money doesn't exist in the first place. Some call this gaslighting. But really, it's just creative budgeting. A little white lie we tell ourselves as we collectively whistle past the graveyard of fiscal responsibility. After all, who needs real solutions when you can have smoke and mirrors? Even within their own ranks, some Republicans are uneasy with this sleight-of-hand approach. Senator Bill Cassidy warns against opening Pandora's box. A fair point considering we've already pried open enough mythical containers filled with trouble lately. And then there's Senator Rand Paul, who points out we're simultaneously claiming to save money while planning to raise the debt limit by another $5 trillion. Because why not? If you're going to juggle flaming torches of financial doom, might as well add a few more for good measure. So here we find ourselves, caught between competing illusions where numbers dance like mirages on hot asphalt roads leading nowhere in particular. It's almost poetic how something as abstract as money can become both everything and nothing at once. A testament perhaps not only to human ingenuity but also our collective capacity for self-deception. In conclusion, or lack thereof, we're left pondering whether any of this really matters, or if life's ultimate punchline is simply that none of us were ever meant to understand what goes on behind those closed doors anyway.
The capitalist's fever dream. In the grand theater of capitalism, where every tick of the stock market is a heartbeat of greed or fear, we find ourselves enthralled by the latest spectacle, the Fear and Greed Index. A decade-old creation born from the ashes of financial collapse, it is heralded as an oracle for investors, an absurdly simplistic gauge to quantify our collective hysteria on Wall Street. Here lies a society obsessed with turning emotions into metrics, where human sentiment is distilled into a 100-point scale. The index oscillates between extreme fear and extreme greed, as if these are the only two states in which markets can exist. In this fever dream, nuance is discarded for binary extremes that reduce complex economic forces to mere caricatures. Amidst President Trump's tariff tirades and global market convulsions, the index registers a paltry 4, a testament to our current state of extreme fear. Social media chimes in with sardonic glee, echoing sentiments of doom, while ironically embracing the chaos with memes and quips. The digital age has turned panic into performance art, each screenshot shared like a badge of honor in this dystopian carnival. The index's origin story reads like a fable from an era not so distant, yet seemingly forgotten, a time when financial crises were fresh wounds rather than faded scars. Conceived in 2012 by journalists seeking to capture market sentiment beyond volatile numbers, it was crafted with 7 indicators, including volatility indices and safe haven demands. Yet what was once innovative has become another tool for voyeuristic fascination rather than genuine understanding. As experts weigh in with polite nods of approval and suggestions for technical tweaks, one must wonder at the absurdity of it all, how an odometer-like graphic captivates both amateur investors and seasoned strategists alike. It's an emblem of our times. Easily digestible data repackaged as profound insight. In this capitalist fever dream, we are spectators applauding our own descent into madness, a world where fear and greed reign supreme over logic and reason. We have surrendered complexity for convenience. We have traded depth for simplicity. We have embraced an illusion that promises certainty amidst chaos, but delivers only more uncertainty cloaked in superficial clarity. And so spins the wheel of fortune, or misfortune, as we continue to chase profits at any cost, blind to the bigger collapse unfolding around us while clutching tightly onto our cherished index, as though it were salvation itself.